I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum from the University of Notre Dame, Australia. I'm hoping, Martin, you might be in Fremantle today.
I'm back in the Harbour City. Always
Well,
a pleasure. Always fantastic.
oh, when you say the Harbour City, which harbour city are you in?
Oh, well, the Fremantle. Fremantle's the port. I should say the port city. Sydney's the Harbour City. Got to get my
See,
facts right.
well, our listeners will appreciate immediately that you're either here in Lyon, Paris, Broome, Sydney so often, and occasionally in Fremantle, in the port city, Martin. Well, you probably should be in Adelaide, where the ALP, the Labor National Conference, is on. Alternatively, you should be in London, or more to the point, in Manchester, doing research on the ground about Andy Burnham, the new UK Prime Minister. Or in Washington, where Trump's imposing a whole lot of new tariffs, Martin, and goodness knows where else you should be. But let me just take you to the UK and Burnham, the new guy. Normally, we don't spend much time on UK politics. I mean, you can break it down into England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, I suppose. But what do you make of this changeover? Are there any lessons for Australia? Are there any similarities with what's happening here?
Well, let's talk a little bit about Andy Burnham. He might be seen as a new, fresh face, but he's been in Labor politics for a long time. He served in the governments of Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. He's actually ran before for the Labor leadership in 2010 and 2015, so he's had previous cracks. But he comes from, he's in Manchester. He's been the mayor of Greater Manchester. And it's not so much ideology, but style that he's where he sought to differentiate himself. He's portraying himself as a man of the regions and a bit of an outsider through that process, Michael, which is an interesting way to do things. He's talking about devolution, you know, this fancy word for taking the services of the people by locating them where they are instead of just in central London and trying to provide local autonomous solutions to these complex problems. I think that's there's a fair bit of rhetoric in that area, but look, I think it could appeal to people, especially in those areas where they feel left out. And we've talked a lot about people feeling left out, so it's a clear sort of strategy there, and it sort of suits his persona and how he's built his own political sort of profile, Michael.
What seem to be the big issues in the UK at the moment? I get the feeling that it doesn't matter what part of the world, at least the Western world, you're in. There's a question about the standard of living. There's a question about environmental net zero achievements. There's the question of immigration. You name it, everyone seems to have it. But what about the Brits? What's apparently upsetting them? Is it all coming from the reform and the right?
I think there's a strong parallel between the types of issues that are in Australia and the types of issues in the UK. Surprise, surprise, housing and homelessness is a real issue, Michael, for a lot of people there. Immigration, because they're right on the edge of Europe and they have European, they have immigrants that have come through Europe to get to Britain. And that's been a big focal point. And whether that's linked to crime, those sorts of things, that's the reform argument, Michael, which is not radically different from One Nation. Although I will say one thing I'll say about Nigel Farage is he sort of distanced himself from the characters like Tommy Robinson that Paul and Hanson's gone over there and kind of hung out with. So there are some subtle differences there, but they're talking about a lot of the same issues. And Farage and Hanson get along pretty well, I think. So those it's not radically different in terms of the issues that they're fighting.
Well, you still get the impression that, like when Bob Hawke all those years ago in the 80s was drafted to lead the Labor Party in Australia, even though Bill Hayden seemed to be doing a reasonable job, that it was so much window dressing. As it turned out, Hawke, of course, had a huge amount of substance as well. But at this stage, I mean, he's getting rid of Keir Starmer, just panic politics for the Labor Party in the UK.
It's a bit like that. I don't know that it changes a lot of things. Certainly, Andy Burnham appears to be a bit more relaxed, natural communicator. You know, a bit more of it comes across as a bit more of a man for the people. And the problem that Keir Starmer had is that he was very Westminster focused. He's a very technocratic kind of person. He'd been a long-standing bureaucrat, all those sorts of things, which, by the way, doesn't necessarily make you a bad prime minister, but it doesn't necessarily make you a good communicator in the way, in a political sense. So I think that what they mainly want is a new spokesman, a new salesman, really, for the team, if I can be, reduce it to that level.
Well, let's turn to what's going on in Australia at the moment. As you say, there's a lot of issues. The Assembly has started to outline some of them, and they're all being sharpened, I suppose, by One Nation's rise in the polls. We've got the One Nation candidate who's now been pre-selected for the state by-election in Secret Harbour. We've got the Victorian elections coming up. They've done reasonably well in South Australia at the last state elections, and One Nation pulled off Barra at the federal by-election not so long ago. So how are Labor responding to this? Do we get any clues from the national conference going on in Adelaide as we speak?
He's touched on some of those. He's got a fine balance. So Anthony Albanese has addressed the Labor conference. He's got a fine balance here because this is where all the true believers are, Michael, and they want you to act on a whole range of things that are really important. Raise the roof even gambling came up and things like that. But he's also conscious it's been picked up by the media and relayed all over Australia. So he has to touch on all of those bread and butter issues that he thinks will pick up votes and to convince people he's being consistent and focused on those things. So I saw him touch on both of those things in his speech, really, and try to speak to both those audiences at the same time, which made for a slightly awkward juncture at one time or another. But there was speaking out of both sides, not quite both sides of the mouth, and they're not completely contradictory, but they are different focal points.
Well, you certainly, if you just look at the headlines, get the point that you're making very strongly. You hear that the government's announcing another $4.6 billion for the Osborne shipyards in Adelaide, a good place to announce that, which I think Richard Marles did yesterday. What was the? I mean, the politics, I suppose, are obvious, Martin, but spell them out for us.
One of his biggest announcements, I think, that kind of captures both those audience or brings them both together, was a significant placement support for students and a whole range of new areas. That was like physio, occupational therapy, speech pathology, all those things which are really important, where there's shortages, but not enough people to go and do them. So I think that was pretty important. Education got a run, which again, touches on both those points as well. He had a crack at One Nation, which is always going to go well down in his heartland, isn't it? You mentioned the new AUKUS announcement, but he packaged that up as an economic benefit for South Australia to get around the US Australian challenge. When you sit in front of an audience of Labor true believers, I don't think AUKUS is actually that popular amongst that crowd at all. In fact, I think they've got a number of motions debating AUKUS. The other thing that's really funny, if we're all political aficionados, Michael, they should go and have a look at the issues being debated at that conference, because there's a lot of lively issues that'll be debated outside of Albanese's speech and when he's probably not around.
I mentioned some of the issues. Australians, quite rightly, in my view, get concerned about getting to net zero, and yet you wonder whether the Labor Party is at all interested these days. I see one report that debate within Labor over a gas export tax failed to reach the floor at the conference on Thursday. And Ed Husic, who used to be a minister, now's on the outer, is suggesting that the party's become allergic to dissent and dispute. But I guess there's the whole question of politics and looking united. The last thing you want to do is look disunited, I suppose. That's one reason you might say the One Nation Party's doing well as the Liberals flounder.
You touched on a few points there. That last one about unity. Political parties used to have very robust debates at their national conferences, Labor and Liberal, both of them. That doesn't tend to happen. They're a lot more stage managed now, particularly around the involvement of the leader. There's sometimes some hairy moments when he's gone and left the room. But for the most part, they're worried about whether the views of their membership actually aligns with government policy, Michael. So you've pointed out on the gas, the tax on gas. A lot more Labor members would want to see a robust tax regime. The government doesn't want to have a bar of that, and they want to be seen as pro-gas, and they think it's important for the economy and the like, and energy supply. So they don't want to debate over it.
But interestingly, I sort of know a little bit about this. There's another suggestion from the Prime Minister about setting up a federal Fair Work Court. I mean, industrial relations was already in the Federal Court of Australia, is one of their important jurisdictions. And before that, there was the Industrial Relations Court of Australia, IRCA, terrible acronym. It's back to wanting a Fair Work Court. And of course, that's sort of the manna from heaven for the opposition. You start saying, oh, all Labor wants to do is stack it with their judges to favour the unions, and they're going to tear business down in the process, Martin.
It is vulnerable to such attacks, but they've focused very deliberately on it not being about favouring workers or businesses, but a procedural, having procedural benefits. That's the whole argument. Whether they can sell this or not, we'll see. But it's that workers and small businesses take forever to actually resolve their issues, 2 years or more. In the meantime, it hurts both parties. So they're selling it as a streamlining affair, really. More than anything else.
Martin, when all the glad handing and the dinners and the side meetings and conversations and don't you worry about it, mate, we're doing all right, are over, and everyone goes back whence they came from after the Labor Party's National Conference, do you expect any particular initiatives to come out of it all that we'll see in place before the next election?
I think that all the initiatives that you'll see come out of the conferences, this conference, were planned in advance and carefully, occasionally leaked before the conference and then announced at key junctures. That's how they work. Look, the tidbits are really interesting. Who comes out and supports a given position that you didn't expect? Does that then forewarn us about policy changes a year or two down the track, those sorts of things. You might get hints from government ministers about the position on certain things. They're also attuned to their own factional base and their own support within the party, so they might abstain or disappear during debates. That kind of thing, Michael, might give us plenty of hints about future directions. Albanese won't be around forever leading the Labor Party.
But Martin, apart from you and I interested in these sorts of things, I wonder how many Australians really are. But let me tell you, apparently, the Chinese People's Republic and the Chinese who occupy Taiwan are interested, as is the Israeli government, all sort of being around the traps, watching, sending missives to the Labor Party National Conference. Apparently, yesterday, Chinese diplomats left the conference after complaining about the presence of Taiwanese officials there. The ALP's confirmed it made it clear that Taiwan's de facto embassy in Canberra were entitled to attend as observers. So interesting stuff, isn't it?
That's those tidbits that I think are really interesting, Michael. It's not the headline act because I think that's already been planned always, right? It's all the stuff that happens around it. You also mentioned Israel. Like, there's a lot of argy-bargy about the exact discussion and wording around Israel and Palestine and the party platform. That might seem semantics, Michael, but it does kind of hint at future directions. If you looked at the last debate, it would have hinted that Labor would have gone out ahead of, say, the Coalition and others in recognising a Palestinian state, because clearly at conference level, a lot of their party members expect it. So there's lots of, I think there's a lot of hints here through how people behave in and around that conference.
Well, Martin, the whole question of nuclear proliferation sort of both excites me negatively and positively. We've just seen an apparent agreement signed or about to be signed between Saudi Arabia and the United States, Trump and the prince ruling Saudi Arabia with big smiles. But it seems, and it's all about apparently enabling Saudi Arabia to have a nuclear power facility. Of course, everyone's worried, as they presently are, the Americans particularly, about a country like Iran developing their nuclear fuel into nuclear bombs. And if I were Israel, I wouldn't be any happier about Saudi Arabia having nuclear capacity than I would Iran. What do you make of this stuff? It seems all a bit odd to me.
I think it is odd because, and in any other government, I think Trump would be under a lot of pressure, right? Any other US president, because on the one hand, he's going to war, no less, ostensibly, with Iran to stop them having a nuclear program, isn't he? That's the main reason, right? On the other hand, with the other hand, he's permitting a civilian nuclear program in Saudi Arabia that, under certain conditions, could result in further enrichment and have for nuclear weapons. Remember, Iran's key argument is that it only wants a nuclear program for civilian use. So I think it absolutely opens up questions about hypocrisy here. Trump's trying to get over this by saying, okay, we're only going to support it if Saudi Arabia signs up to the Abraham Accords. That involves recognizing Israel as a legitimate state. I think those things are positive directions to have better relations there, but it's still pretty hypocritical. My mates can have a nuclear program, but my enemies can't.
Well, the question is, who are his enemies now? This morning, there's been a fresh range of tariffs imposed by President Trump's administration on a whole lot of people who seem to be his friends or thought they were. Of course, just a week or so ago, he was imposing huge extra tariffs on Canada. They don't like all the dairy products, for a start, it seems, that come out of Canada and flood or otherwise enter the US. I mean, this new tariff business, Martin, attempts to get around the Supreme Court rules by saying they're trying to wipe out, labour issues in all of our countries, including Australia, I might add. I mean, it's just so much nonsense. But how do you resolve it?
Well, I think it's clearly a measure by Trump. He had his tariffs struck down by the Supreme Court, and he needs another measure to put those in place because he believes it's that's his signature policy. And so he's accusing Australia and many other countries of poor track record on forced labour, no less, and he's using that as a mechanism. Now, Australia's pointed out that by the US's own admission, when the US has written reports on this, that we're tracking pretty well, and that there's no obvious discernible difference between Australia's policies and track record and those countries that have a bit less tariffs as well. So they pointed out that this is not really evidence-based. Australia, by the way, does not have a perfect record on forced labour, but I think if you ask experts on forced labour, they would say, there's still no evidence that this is materially linked to tariffs, and what you're seeing with these policy settings mirrors the worst countries and the best countries' performance.
Well, Mark, you don't often see good photographs of Don Farrell, but I have to say, The Guardian have got a couple of beauties of him looking very serious and very trade minister-like this morning. And he's just made the point that you've made, that these tariffs are unjustified, inconsistent with our free trade agreement, should be removed. He says Australia's measures to combat forced labour and modern slavery are among the strongest in the world, and we are recognised globally, including in the US, for our leadership. I mean, it's a tough topic, but I mean, America just, for one minute they're trying to engage in all of this tough stuff, warfare. Now they want to be guardians of slavery and wiping it out. I mean, I can't keep up with it, Martin. I think it's time to go down the street and have a coffee.
Well, if these measures were implemented as part of a suite of initiatives, Michael, to tackle forced labour globally, I would have a lot of sympathy for them because I think it's an issue that I'm quite passionate about personally. I think that forced labour is a terrible blight on at the international community, and all of us contribute to it in different ways. But that's simply not the case. It's not accompanied by anything else that indicates that the Trump administration is serious about the issue. I think it's hard to sort of move away from that position that this is just a mechanism to try to provide a legal basis for tariffs.
It'd be very interesting to say to the US administration, wouldn't it? Those of you without sin can cast the first stone here. Those in glass houses, look out. So, I wonder if anyone sat down and analysed what the position on forced labour is with the US. No doubt we'll hear a bit about it shortly, Martin.
I think we will, and I think there'd be very interesting observations about recent immigrants from Latin America and places like Mexico and others, and how well they get paid compared to other US citizens.
Well, on that interesting note, Martin, I think we bring today's view from the Roundhouse to an end. There's only one important point to make is I saw Fremantle cruise to victory over Port Adelaide. They still sing Port Power at the Adelaide Oval, I can tell you, as I was watching last Saturday lunchtime. Frio up against the West Coast Eagles tonight, the traditional derby. I imagine it'll be a different sort of game from most they've played recently. What do you reckon?
Oh, absolutely. And the Eagles haven't been in great form, but one thing we know about the Derby is that they'll probably fire up. They'll probably find something they don't normally have. So it'll be, but they'll be played with plenty of fire, Michael, and guarantee that.
Well, we'll find out the result when we get together again next Friday, Martin.
Pleasure as always.
See you then.